Keegan Murray's month of November has been bad, to say the absolute least. Maybe he just needs to get into December, get into the Christmas spirit, and he'll get back to playing at the level we expect him to play at. But all things considered, there's no need to panic about Keegan at this point. Frankie Cardicelli and I will discuss why right here on Locked On Kings.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome into Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all offseason. Today, presented by BetOnline. They have you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm a Sacramento sports reporter and producer for ABC 10 News. And Frankie Cardicelli, a great friend of mine, former co-worker of mine at Sactown Sports 1140 Radio. He joins me once again here on Locked On Kings. We talk about a bunch of stuff. Now, the meat of the conversation of what we discuss, of course, has to do with Keegan Murray. But we actually start our conversation talking a lot about this or the 7-game win streak followed by the last two games that the Kings have lost. And we spent a lot of time talking about what was real from that win streak and what maybe was difficult for Sacramento to continue, or what's unrealistic to expect the Kings to continue or carry out over the course of the season that they were doing during that win streak. So if you're in a little bit of a hurry, in a time crunch, and just want to hear the Keegan Murray conversation, you can skip ahead to after the first ad break. That's when we really get into that discussion and it carries through the rest of the podcast. But I hope you'll listen to the full thing because talking to Frankie is always a real treat. So I'll get out of the way right now. Here is my conversation with Sacktown Sports 1140s and the return of the Roars, Frankie Cardicelli. 7-game win streak followed by a 2-game losing streak, I guess you could call it. Back-to-back losses, technically a streak, but hopefully it doesn't become 3 with a very difficult stretch starting with the Phoenix Suns on Monday. I will be inside the Golden 1 Center for that game, joined by Frankie Cardicelli, who of course will be at the game. He's at every single home game, covers the Sacramento Kings for Sacktown Sports 1140, also one of the hosts of the Return of the Roar podcast, back with me here on Locked On Kings. Frankie, we're going to do a little exercise here to start our conversation. We're going to start with the optimistic hat and then put on the pessimistic hat when we're looking at the 7-game win streak. Optimistically, looking at that 7-game win streak, what do you think is real? What do you think is legitimate to where you could say, like, this is who the Sacramento Kings are. This is repeatable. This is what this Kings team can be. That was positive while they were winning 7 in a row.
Matthew, first of all, thank you for having me. And second of all, it's always great to be on with you on this fine Sunday morning, mind you. but no, I'm encouraged by the offense. I mean, the offense, if you look at the 7-game winning streak, they shot 53% from the field, 38% from 3. Now, looking at the 2-game losing streak, that drops off by 10%, 43% from the field, 26% from 3-point. So I'm encouraged by the offense. I mean, they have a top 3 offense in the NBA. They were number 1 for a couple of days there. Dropped down to 3, I believe, in offensive rating. Still second in points per game. I'm not going to let 2 rough games, especially from beyond the arc, kind of deter me from where I think this team is heading on the offensive side of things. And, you know, I guess the pessimistic side of things is the defense still looks bad, and it still is a work in progress. I know that Mike Brown and his staff they're working to make those adjustments, and that's why we see all these quick timeouts called in games, trying to kind of nip things in the bud before they get out of hand. And the Kings haven't really been able to get a hold on that so far, but the offense is good. The Kings have a good offense. I think we can say that that's not a fluke at this point. We're over about around a quarter of the way through the season now. And I think that the 2-game sample size isn't enough for me to feel down about the offense. So I'm feeling good about the offense. I think this team's still kind of heading in the right direction.
Was there anything that the Kings were doing really well or really right during that 7-game win streak that makes you think, man, that's going to be hard for them to replicate or repeat or do consistently over the course of an 82-game season?
I mean, the turnovers were down during that winning streak. And as you see over the past couple of games, they turned the ball over 18 times, or the last 3 games, 18 times. And that Memphis game, they weren't really on the way to having an 18-turnover game, but things got really sloppy late. And, you look at most of those games there, the Cleveland game, they turned the ball over 9 times. They've turned the ball over 12 times against the Spurs, 11 against the Pistons. Having a hole in the basketball can be very, very valuable in some of these close games. And we saw what happened in Memphis. The game almost got away from them, a game that was in hand. And it's something that we've seen happen over the years with this team. The Kings have had 6, 7, 8 point leads with 2 minutes left, and they've ended up blowing games. I mean, I literally have too many to list off in my mind. The Hornets game from a couple of years ago sticks out. There's a Pistons game from a few years ago too. So just taking care of the basketball. I think that the Kings have done a good job for the most part of taking care of the basketball. And of course, over the past couple of games, hasn't really been the case. I'm kind of trying to do a little too much. They've had some really good sequences of ball movement, and sometimes it's players kind of maybe making a stretch on some, behind the back. There's some, I guess, call it getting cute. There's some things the Kings have done that are a little too flashy and that kind of result in things going the other way. So the ball movement is still, in my opinion, it's impressive, but they have to kind of cut down on these turnovers, and especially when you're in late game situations and you have teams like the Memphis Grizzlies putting pressure on you and the Boston Celtics, who, as we know, are an NBA Finals contender. So being able to hold on to the ball, not get all those high turnover rates, that's going to be pretty important going forward.
Yeah, the Kings bench played extremely well during that 7-game win streak, so much so that I think during that streak they were averaging upwards of like 50 points a game or something like that, led by Malik Monk, who I think during that stretch was averaging between 16 and 18 points. Trey Lyles was playing really well. Davion Mitchell, while not necessarily providing a huge boost offensively, was kind of back to his off night defensive self, and different guys were stepping up. Terrence Davis is, of course, 31 point game against the Brooklyn Nets. So I see the depth of this Kings team, which is something we talked a lot about, and we didn't see at all during that 0-4 start to the season. But I wonder, Frankie, like, can we realistically expect the bench to be that good over the course of an entire season? And do the Sacramento Kings need the bench to be that good to have a chance at actually being not a play-in team, but a playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, having a good bench is certainly valuable in making a run in that regard. But I think it kind of comes down to what's going on in the starting lineup too. If Harrison Barnes and Keegan Murray, who have struggled, and again, you see Kevin Huerter, who had an uncharacteristic night against the Celtics. I don't think he made a three-pointer, or he shot, where is it right here? 2 of 10 from the field, 0 of 6 from three. When that's happening, in hand with Keegan Murray, of course, is his struggles, which I know I'm sure we're going to get into in a little bit, but you need your bench to pick up the slack. And that just hasn't really been the case over the past two games. When those guys that are so valuable to your success, Harrison Barnes, Kevin Huerter, Keegan Murray, when they're all not kind of firing and picking up their end of things, you need a Davion Mitchell to have 13, 15 points. You need to have Terrence Davis run into a crazy 20, 30 point night. Trey Lyles have a big night. So it helps that the Kings have those guys on the bench. You have players that are capable of coming in and plugging those holes and kind of helping you bridge that gap. But we're still at a point where the Kings aren't getting complete consistency from Harrison Barnes and Keegan Murray. Most notably those two. Kevin Huerter has been one of the best players in the Kings this season. So I'm not going to let one game, I'm not going to use that as an example going into this, I guess. But Harrison Barnes, still not the consistency we've been looking for. Playing better. He's playing better, and that's a great, great sign. But it kind of comes back to Keegan Murray, and I don't want to put that all on him, but when you have a starting forward who is failing to produce and not knocking down those shots, it's kind of unfair to put it on the bench and say, okay, well, Trey Lyles needs to come in and pick up the slack, and Malik Monk, who's done a great job, but he can only carry so much weight. So it kind of just depends on that cohesiveness of can the starting lineup and the bench unit both produce their abilities.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about Keegan Murray here in just a second. I wanted to sneak one more thing in before we talk about Keegan. Like, 7-game win streaks don't just happen. They're not flukes necessarily. So when I see the Kings rattle off 7 straight, to me, that is a clear indication that this team is a lot better. Now, we knew they weren't going to win every single game for the remainder of the season. We knew they were going to be, Mike Brown has talked about 2 steps forward, 1 step back at times. So hopefully that 1 step doesn't become a 3, 4, 5-game losing streak. And with games against Phoenix and Indiana, you have Milwaukee and Cleveland on the road coming up here to round out this 6-game stretch. Chicago Bulls coming into town, the LA Clippers. Like, there are a lot of losable games certainly during the stretch, but also games where I think Sacramento should be competing on every single night in games where, at least in the case of the Indiana Pacers, as well as they're playing, I expect the Kings to win that game at home. I expect the Kings to have a chance to win against the Phoenix Suns at home. A 7-game win streak doesn't just happen. So it's not a fluke necessarily for this team. But do you think maybe, I don't know if it's from a fan perspective or from a team perspective, a player perspective, that 7-game losing streak, or rather winning streak, got this Kings team maybe ahead of themselves a little bit, thinking they were maybe a little further along than they actually are?
I mean, I guess it's kind of to whoever's interpretation. I guess you can interpret it however you'd like, I guess, if you're a fan or someone that's taking these games in. But from what I've seen, someone who I'm not saying I've been down on them, but over the past couple of seasons, I've certainly not felt good about the Sacramento Kings. When you win 7 games in a row and the way that you're doing it, I mean, they did have a couple of games there in that streak where they just brought the hammer down. I mean, I'm looking at the Brooklyn game and the Spurs game, but they're winning seven games in a row. The Kings, it's the longest winning streak in 17, 18 years. So I don't know if I can just say, maybe they're ahead of themselves and they kind of ran into one. I mean, I would have loved to see the Kings run into a 7-game winning streak a couple of years ago, especially one of those seasons where they were right there in the play-in hunt. I think in 2019 and 2020, they could have used a 7-game winning streak, but those never came to fruition. So the fact that they're pulling out close games, and even in the games that they're losing, the Celtics game, they led a horrible, it was a 37-4 run, I think, or something like that. It was bad. That to me is an anomaly. That's not going to happen to the Kings more times than not this season. When you look at what happening in Atlanta, the game was right there for the taking. They were within 7 for what felt like half of the fourth quarter, and nobody could seem to strike to break through. The Hawks too struggled with putting the game away, but the Kings, 3-pointers weren't falling. So I've felt encouraged by the fact that the games are close. You would have liked to see the Kings win some of those games by a little more and get more comfortable and run away with them. But that comes down to closing out games, something that we saw again. I keep going back to Memphis, but until the Kings learn how to close out those games that are 1-2 possessions there with a couple minutes left and really stretch it out of hand, we're going to be feeling kind of on the fence like we do right now about them. Or like how you're saying you feel. Like, are we ahead of ourselves? I don't know. I mean, I like to think not. But until they start closing out those games and really kind of putting those streaks, not really a 7-game streak exactly, but winning games by comfortable margins, I think that's going to be what we look at this team and say, oh, they're for real, definitely. So I guess we'll see how the next couple of weeks unfold. Like you said, the schedule gets tough.
And it's not just, I think, winning streaks. It's winning 2 out of 3. It's winning 3 out of 4. It's finding a way to go 500 on a very difficult Eastern Conference road trip or something like that. Like, those are the little steps that are just as big of indicators of the growth of the Sacramento Kings as a 7-game win streak is. I think that reignited some momentum and some belief, not just from the fans, but from the team in themselves and what they can do. But I talked about this on the last podcast. Like, you just got blown out for the first time this season by the Boston Celtics, a game in which you were down big early and you managed to come back and make it competitive until you gave up, what, like a 36-4 run or something ridiculous. Like, and that's against one of the best teams in the NBA. Or, I mean, record-wise, the best team in the NBA right now. So some losses are necessary evils if you learn from it, if you adapt and overcome it. So, I mean, maybe that's what we're looking for, Frankie, is I'm looking at this Phoenix game on Monday. And like I said, it's a home game. I know the Phoenix Suns, I think, the best team in the Western Conference right now, but they're not miles ahead of anybody else. They're a beatable team. The Sacramento Kings have had success against the Suns in years past when the Kings have been terrible. So I expect that game to be competitive. I expect the Kings to defend their home floor. But when we're watching, whether it's how the Kings start the game, whether it's individual performances, taking care of the basketball, do the Sacramento Kings make adjustments and take lessons from their bad loss in Boston and incorporate that in the next game? Because in years past, we've seen the Kings take 3 to 4 weeks to learn from mistakes. And by that time, you're in way too big of a hole.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued to see what happens, especially another rotation. could look a little different because Casey Okpala finally broke through. I think the Casey Okpala that we saw on Friday was the Casey Okpala that Kings fans were kind of looking at and saying, wow, this could be the guy that plays defense and grabs rebounds and maybe runs into a 3-pointer occasionally. And that's exactly what happened the other night. And he did kind of make a difference in the defensive end. And of course, Jason Tatum was Jason Tatum, but he helped kind of bait those the big two, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, into foul trouble. The Kings had Tatum, Brown, and Smart all with four fouls there in the third quarter, and they weren't able to capitalize. But I think that Kaze Akpala, when you look at the fact that the Kings have let the star player on every team they've played so far this season, for the most part, beat them, you have Devin Booker coming in tomorrow night. And I wouldn't be against the Kings throwing out Kaze Akpala and saying, hey, probably should try him out instead of Kevin Huerter. I don't know how that's going to go, or I'm not sure if Mike Brown would go with Keegan Murray or Harrison Barnes, but I still think that isn't enough. I think you need to throw your best defender at Devin Booker because he might make that might make things pretty difficult for the Kings. So I'm very intrigued to see how the matchup goes with Phoenix. DeAndre Ayton versus Domantas Sabonis is going to be something to watch for. I think DeAndre Ayton has had like a 29-point, 21 rebound outing, I think, which is insane. So seeing Domantas Sabonis kind of match up with the center who can kind of, you know, they're both on track to hopefully make their first All-Star team. It's going to be exciting to see.
Today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. They are your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. You can get all the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer with the World Cup going on right now and esports. They've got it all at betonline.net. Now, I know this is a basketball podcast, but I've had a lot of fun paying attention to the lines, the prop bets, the side bets that have to do with the World Cup. And there is not a better betting sportsbook out there, betting website out there, that allows you to gamble and add that extra monetary incentive to the World Cup matches. Maybe Team USA isn't playing, you want to find a reason to care about some of these other matches. Hey, put some money on the line a little bit. Have some fun with that. Maybe you made some money off of Argentina defeating Mexico. I think that was yesterday, a couple days ago at some point. They're all blending together. Whatever you're betting on, BetOnline is the right place for you. And if you love sports podcasts, you can find those as well at BetOnline. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. You can head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. Well, Frankie, how's your November been? You've had a nice November? You had a good month?
Personally or with the team?
Personally.
Personally. Just for you. It's
how's
good.
Your month been?
It's been good. You know, it's been good. I was on with Chris yesterday on Kings Weekly, and we talked about like Thanksgiving, and my family went a different route this year. We went with chicken instead of turkey. I'm not sure how you feel about that. I mean, I don't know if that's like I feel like people are kind of coming off turkey. I feel like turkey is not really as hyped up as a Thanksgiving food as it used to be. Do you feel that same way?
You know, we could go the rest of the podcast talking about stuff like this, because I always prefer chicken over turkey, and I only really have turkey, unless it's like a deli sandwich, I only really have turkey on Thanksgiving. But the reason why I ask Frankie about your month of November is because I'm glad you're having a good month. I've had a pretty good month too. Keegan Murray hasn't. Like, it's been a dreadful month for Keegan. And that's after, like, he averaged in October. He played five games in October and averaged 17.4 points per game, was shooting 39% from three, 49% from the field. In November, he's averaging 7.2 points per game. He's shooting 26% from three-point range, 32% from the field. He's, over the last seven games, I'm looking at it here, he scored four or less points five out of the seven times. And you look at the last three games, 3 points against Boston in 23 minutes, 4 points against Atlanta in 21 minutes, 2 points against Memphis in 24 minutes. Now, I've always looked at Keegan Murray as a really, really, really good role player. And I don't mean that as like he's not a starter, because you can be a starter and a role player. I think Harrison Barnes kind of fills that niche too. Like, Keegan Murray spaces the floor. He fits with what the Sacramento Kings try to do. He fills a role even as a very important starter. But if you're not hitting shots, that role is, I mean, it's moot. Now, I will appreciate the fact that, like, in the Boston game, even though he only had a few points, he pulled down 10 rebounds. So it's not like he's worthless or useless. And defensively, sometimes he makes mistakes, but for the most part, defensively, he's not a liability by any means. But Keegan Murray's shot just looks like has completely disappeared from the efficiency that we've seen to start this season. The efficiency that we saw in summer league, the efficiency that we saw in preseason. Is something wrong? do you think it's just a cold streak? Do you see a wane in confidence? Like, what are you seeing with Keegan Murray over this month of November? Does the month just need to end for him to get back to himself?
It looks almost like and it's almost autopilot-y. Like, he has had a couple of plays where it just looks like he's kind of lost out there. And there was one play against the Celtics where he drove right at Al Horford, and without even a fake or a stutter step or anything, just kind of tried to go with his left hand to the basket, and Al Horford sent it to, I think, the fifth row. And it just was kind of a move where I was like, like, I don't really know what the thought process was there. I mean, there wasn't any. He looks a little lost right now, and the shot, he's getting open looks. And it's something that Chris and I talked about yesterday too, where I'm not going to say Keegan Murray is Nick Stauskas or Ben McLemore by any means, but it's to the point now where the shot, when the shot leaves his hands, you think it's going in every time. It just, it has a good look. The form looks the same way it looked a couple of weeks ago when he was playing very well. They're just not falling. And I don't know if there's really a clear answer for why that is. I mean, I'm sure, as we know, there are some things that are affecting him from a mental capacity as far as things are happening with his family off of the floor. I'm not sure how much that's leaking into his play. He's still out there suiting up every night, ready to go, and he wants to play. So it's going to come down to, when will the results come? Will they come? And how long will it take for them to come? Because the Kings, they've lost two games in a row. No reason to sound the alarm. But I think a topic of discussion right now is, when do you make that call to move Keegan Murray back to the bench? Me personally, I don't know if it's time for that yet. I think that you have Keegan Murray, who, he was your guy at number four in the draft. He's someone you're playing big minutes. I think he's earned that right to try and work his way through this rough stretch. Because as we saw, that I think it was the first to second week of his career, after missing the first game, he was playing very, very well, and things have kind of trailed off since then. So I think he's earned that right to try to play through it a little bit longer. But we might not see him out of a starting lineup, but we could see him out of these late game situations. We could see Malik Monk playing over Keegan Murray. We could see, even in a defensive pinch, Kaze Akpala. Like, he could come in and try to defend the best player on the floor. We might not see Keegan on the floor because he is, at this point, kind of a liability in these situations. So it's going to come down to, can the rookie work through it? He's young. I don't know if it's time to say it's a rookie wall. It's kind of early in the season for that, but essentially that's what it looks like to me. It looks like an early season rookie wall.
I think pulling Keegan Murray out of the starting lineup is a way too knee-jerk reaction. However, I think you hit the nail on the head about him not being on the floor to close games. And this is another big indication of the struggles that he's having between October and November. In October, he was averaging 35 minutes a game. In November, he's averaging 26. A 9-minute drop-off in 1 month says it all right there. He's not as efficient in those minutes, so he's not playing as much, even if he is starting every single game. I still think the fact that Keegan Murray is getting open shots suggests to me that he still is in the right spot. He's in the right position. He's in the right role. Like, he naturally does what the Kings need out of that position. The shot's just not falling right now. Okay, so you go with the hotter hand, which is changing on any given night. It could be Trey Lyles some nights. It could be Terrence Davis. It could be Malik Monk. And I think Mike Brown's very comfortable with that. And he showed that comfort level, not just with Keegan Murray. He's shown that comfort level with everybody. Like, he adjusted or heavily adjusted Malik Monk and Kevin Herter's minutes when Terrence Davis was going off. The very next game, Malik Monk was having a good game. So Terrence Davis took a step back minutes-wise. Like, he has shown a consistency to go. Mike Brown has shown a consistency to go and stick with the hot hand. So I don't think Keegan Murray takes that as any kind of punishment or suggestion that the less minutes, even as a starter, means that the Kings aren't happy with him. He's just not producing at the rate that the Kings need him to. So I think pulling him out of the starting lineup would be an unnecessary knee-jerk reaction. But he does have to earn his way back into playing on the floor in critical moments. And honestly, I think what he needs to do, Frankie, is just simplify things again. Don't try and do too much. What I saw him do in summer league, what I saw him do to start this season, was just play in the flow. Like, that's what we've talked about so much, is just playing in the flow of the offense. He's getting open shots. They're not falling right now. If they're open, keep shooting them. No one can blame you for shooting open shots. Keep shooting them. I expect at some point they're going to start going in. Keegan never wanes in confidence. So as concerned is not the right word. There is something that I do want to talk about, and I'll get to in a second, about what worries me a little bit about what we're seeing with Keegan compared to the Kings. But I don't think there's any reason to be concerned about how Keegan is playing. It's just the shot isn't there right now.
Yeah, and to quote Buddy Hield, the great Buddy Hield, next shot, best shot. So keep shooting.
Well, I don't know if Keegan Murray's going to have an inspirational Buddy Hield poster on his wall, but you know, I respect it.
I don't want Keegan to pull up like Buddy and take a shot with 10 seconds on the shot clock, which Buddy Hield back in the building on Wednesday night, by the way. Well, interesting to see what kind of reception he's going to get. But
you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because we know Tyrese is going to get the hero's welcome. And Buddy was frustrating as hell at times and absolutely made me want to pull my hair out. But Buddy Hield, and you can attest to this too, Frankie, Buddy's a good dude. Like, he's a good, goofy, funny, fun-loving dude, has a phenomenal story. So there's absolutely no reason to boo Buddy Hield. Now, I am very selfishly hoping that Buddy Hield dribbles the ball off of his leg in a clutch moment or a crucial moment at some point that benefits the Kings, because we've seen that happen plenty of times at the detriment of the Kings. So
it happened last time the Kings played the Pacers too. I think last year, the Damian Jones last second tip in, Buddy, I think he turned the ball over, or he did dribble off his foot, I think, which was poetic justice, I guess. But no, I think you're right. I think that Buddy Hield, I think the way that the exit out of Sacramento was kind of not great. I know that he was not happy. And when you lose for as long as the Kings have lost, when you've been here for what, 4 or 5 years, I think it's easy to want a different situation. I can't really blame him for that, but the way that he handled himself, that's on him. But he doesn't deserve to be, in my opinion, doesn't deserve to be booed, but he might be. And Tyrese especially does not deserve to be booed. I know he's had these interviews that have, I know he's still kind of upset about the Sacramento trade. And I mean, he deserves to be upset. He's moving on at his own speed, I guess, but he doesn't deserve to be booed. No. And I hope that neither are, but I expect that there will be some boost sprinkled in, but that's the way that it goes. It won't be like Marvin Bagley. I wasn't expecting that.
I was not in the building for that. So he was booed.
Every single time that he touched the basketball, he was booed for
a
majority of the game. He did go on a little run there, and it got kind of quiet, though. He did have a run where he scored 6-7 points in the third quarter. But
in Marvin's situation, I feel like he was being booed because of the sins of his father and his family more than himself. Because Marvin's another one of those good guys. Now, he didn't necessarily say the best things on podcasts at times. But Marvin is one of those guys that was, I think, hurt more by his family's Twitter account than by anything that he said or did here in Sacramento. But anyway, getting back to Keegan Murray.
back to the other forward.
The current issue for the Sacramento Kings. Another angle that I want to look at with this, and the area where I'm a little worried, Frankie, is while Keegan has struggled the most, Sacramento has played the best. And when Keegan was playing really well at the start of the season, the Kings were kind of starting to figure things out, but they weren't winning 7 in a row. Now, to be fair, during that 7-game stretch, he had a couple of games. He had a 20-point game. He had like a 16-point game. Like, he had a couple of games where he played solid. So I'm not suggesting, I think it's a very, very terrible slippery slope to say, oh, the Kings played better when Keegan Murray wasn't playing well or Keegan wasn't contributing to that 7-game win streak. But that's the area where I think, okay, maybe things are going a little too fast for the young man. Like, maybe the Kings and their trajectory as a franchise of, we're trying to be successful right now, and Keegan, even though he's an older rookie, having to live up to the pressure and the expectations of being the fourth overall pick and being a starting contributor to a playoff team, you don't see that a lot from fourth overall picks. So maybe that's where my worry is, does Keegan get left behind a little bit because the Sacramento Kings can't afford to wait for him?
I mean, yeah, what did we say all summer league and the first couple of games he played? He looks like a veteran. He looks like he's been here for 5-6 years. And that puts a little more pressure on him. And of course, when you have guys like De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, players in there that are 1 and 2 options, and now you have Kevin Huerter emerging as a 3 since Keegan made his debut, it does kind of phase him to the 4th, 5th option. I mean, I would say arguably he is the 4th, maybe 5th. I mean, him and Harrison Barnes, maybe a tie for the 4th, 5th option with no clear winner. I mean, it just depends on the night, but right now it's Harrison Barnes. So I guess now he is the 5th option because Harrison Barnes has been picking it up. So I wouldn't worry too much about him being left behind. I feel like he'll get his licks in when he needs to, and he'll get his shots off. And I think that, like you said earlier, just he has to keep shooting and kind of figure it out. And I wouldn't worry too much about him being phased out or not being a part of the marquee aspect of why they're winning games. If he's not the leader scoring 24 points and grabbing 7 rebounds, but the Kings are winning, that's something that he can live with and I can live with, and I'm sure the rest of the team can live with. But the Kings, what they have right now is working. And the way that's working is De'Aaron Fox is playing like an all-star. Domantas Sabonis is playing like an all-star. Kevin Huerter and the rest of the supporting cast are doing their job. So right now, Keegan Murray doesn't need to come out and play like a star 1-4 pick in the draft, like we've seen some of the other guys kind of come in and play like Paolo Banchero. We don't need him to score 18 and grab 8 rebounds. We need him to kind of just do his role, which might be averaging 9-10 points and knocking down a couple threes per game and providing some average or slightly above average defense. And right now, I guess we'll lean kind of towards more of the average side. But don't need him to be a superstar. Don't need him to come out and be a game changer. And if it happens to take place in a specific game, that's great for his growth and great for the team. But I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think he's going to try to stretch and force shots and take shots away from De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. We haven't seen that yet. So it just comes down to his growth as a player. And he's only been an NBA player for, 16, 17 games? So long way to go for him is before we start kind of worrying about big picture stuff.
I think the tough way to look at it from a Kings fan perspective is you can't really compare him to the other top rookies in this class in the sense that, you can if it's a rookie of the year race, which I think, unless Paolo Banchero gets hurt, I don't know how in any facet of imagination that he does not win that award. And the reason is because Paolo Banchero is the guy on a team that I wouldn't say the Orlando Magic are bad necessarily. They're not great. I actually like what they're doing, but they don't have winning expectations. So Paolo can go out there and get all of his touches, all of his shots, and put up all the numbers that he wants most of the time in losses. That's fine. The Kings have had their fair share of rookies that do that over the course of this playoff drought. I mean, you look at Benedict Mathurin, the thing that he's doing in Indiana. Maybe that's more of a close comparison because I think Mathurin is helping that team win basketball games and playing an important role while also playing like a star next to Tyrese Halliburton. Jaden Ivey. We know Jaden Ivey is kind of more of this flash flare, do everything himself once again on a team in the Detroit Pistons that don't really have any winning expectations. Keegan Murray is a starter on a team with playoff, not just expectations, but playoff demands. He has to fit that role. He can't just get his. Now, I think he can get his by fitting the role if the shots are falling, and we've seen that in stretches where he's put up those quiet Tim Duncan 20-point games. You're like, okay, wow, this is a veteran type ability that we're seeing out of Keegan. But I don't think it's necessarily fair to compare Keegan Murray and his productivity to some of the other rookies in this class because his situation is extremely different. Now we look at how he's playing game to game and we look at how he's contributing or not contributing to the Sacramento Kings winning. That's where he needs to be judged. And of course, right now he's not living up to that.
Yeah. And that's a great point too. I mean, this isn't a situation where Keegan Murray is coming into a Kings team that is expected to be but because everybody did expect the Kings to be in the mix for the lottery coming into a season because national attention never is positive. Yeah, but I mean, this coaching staff and the roster does not expect to be in the mix for the lottery. So this isn't Keegan Murray coming in for a team that's looking to go get the first, second pick. They aren't plugging in the Keegan Murray saying, go play your 35 minutes, go be our leading scorer, go be Paolo Banchero, essentially. He is on a team with stars, with veterans, with, in my opinion, he's on a good NBA roster. And that's not a knock on Paolo Banchero or Jaden Ivey or other players that are on teams that are struggling right now. But that is kind of what it is right now. And the teams that I just named, the Detroit Pistons, the Orlando Magic, they're at the bottom of their conferences. So it's going to come down to, can Keegan Murray play his role right now? And there could be a scenario where a year from now, I mean, Harrison Barnes is going to be a free agent. Maybe he is the small forward of the future for the Kings. And that's something that's very, very realistic possibility that Keegan Murray is the small forward of the future for the Kings. Because if Harrison Barnes decides to move on to greener pastures, I think that Keegan's going to be more of a small forward than a power forward in the future. I think right now he's more of a small forward than a power forward, but it's almost like the Kings didn't bring Keegan Murray into this lineup in the form of a number four overall pick. It's almost like they signed like a role player slash guy to kind of plug holes right now. But next year, maybe he will become that fourth overall pick, or maybe later on the season, he expands in a role because of injury or something. Other things arise that Keegan Murray has to take more of a step forward and kind of be who he was during summer league and be the focal point of the offense or be one of the leaders. Because if, knock on wood, any of the big guys go down in Fox or Sabonis, Keegan Murray has to step up. I mean, in my opinion, if he's healthy and he's playing, that's going to be where it's time to say, okay, he's probably one of the more offensively gifted players on the roster if Fox or Sabonis are both playing. So that's going to fall on him more in that regard. But it's going to be interesting to see how kind of he advances throughout the course of a season. And right now, how he deals with adversity, how he deals with the fact that he is playing poorly. Can he do what he did earlier this season and break out of it?
Finally, Frankie, three out of the next four games are at home. After that, it's a six-game Eastern Conference road trip. We won't even get into that. Let's talk about three out of the next four games. Phoenix, Indiana, Clippers in L.A., and then Bulls here in Sacramento to round up that four-game stretch. The Bulls having beaten the Boston Celtics not too long ago. Still a very good and still a very dangerous team there in Chicago. When you're looking at this stretch, if you're setting the realistic goal for Sacramento, of course, the goal is to win all four, certainly to go 3-0 during the three games at home. But is if the Kings come out of the stretch 500 or go 2-2 in the stretch, rather, you feeling good? Is it 3-1 you need them to feel good? Do they need to win two out of the three at home? Like, what to you is, okay, if the Kings are the team that I think they are, this is what they need to do over this four-game stretch before a very difficult road trip?
Realistically, I think a split would be great to me. I mean, that's a tough slate of games coming up. And the fact that you're at home, in my opinion, it really helps. The Kings have been a good home team as far as I can remember. I mean, even the years they've been really bad, they kind of take a step forward at home. And when you're playing teams that are in the mix and contending in their respective conferences, if you can come out of it 500, if the Kings kind of not tread water, I guess, but if they can kind of hover on the 500 mark through this tough portion of a schedule, things open up. I think they open up in late December into early January. They can make a real run here, make a real run towards the deadline too in February. So if you can tread water and be a 500 team, just be a 500 team. I think that the Kings being a, what was it, 2-3 seed for a couple of days was super fun to see. Very exciting. I don't know if I'm ready to say the Kings are a top 3-4 seed in the West, but if they can be a 500 team, they're going to be a top 8-9 team at the very least. They might even be higher. So if you can play 500 basketball, you're going to be where you want to be. And that's something the Kings haven't done, like we know, in nearly two decades, play 500 basketball. So that would be a great start for me. And they're doing it right now. They're above 500 after, I think, what, almost 20 games this season. So that's an accomplishment. And if they can continue to do that, play near 500 basketball, like I said, they're going to be where they want to be.
Well, the road continues on Monday night against the Phoenix Suns. Frankie, you and I will be out there for that game. I look forward to see you in the Golden 1 Center. Appreciate you taking the time here on Locked On Kings. My friend, we'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir, Matt. I'll see you in the media break room for hot dogs at halftime. See you then.
Hot dogs and cookies, if I can get one. Those vultures, they take them quick. Big thank you to Frankie again for joining me here on Locked On Kings. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you want to respond to anything that Frankie and I discussed, want to share your opinions on Keegan Murray's struggles, want to talk about the Kings' win streak and the last two games, the differences that you've seen, any expectations that you have for this upcoming four-game stretch for the Kings, three out of the four being at home, send those to me at MattGeorgeSack on Twitter. You can email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com, and leave your thoughts in the YouTube comment section down below. For right now, we are done. Really appreciate your time. Hopefully I will see you in the Golden 1 Center on Monday for Kings and Suns. If you're going to that game, please let me know. Stop by. I would love to chat with you. Say hi and thank you for listening to the podcast in person. But for right now, I'm out of here. I got to go get this cold that still is lingering. This cold, I mean, if you any of you had this cold that's going around, man, it just does not freaking go away. I'm in like week three of this son of a gun right now, and it's killing me and my son. So hopefully I'll get through it. Appreciate your support, and I can't wait to have you join me on the next episode of Locked On Kings. Until then, my name is Matt George. You've been listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.